fucking go.
Can you hear the music?
Knock it off. Both of you guys.
Can you hear the music?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people can't. All right, welcome back to another episode of On the Throne with Dick. And shout out to Senjin Boychuk for that incredible intro outro music. Find him all over the socials. And today I'm really excited to have Captain Dave Marciano here from Wicked Tuna. He's captain of the Hard Merch. How's it going, man?
Doing?
Oh, good, man. Just getting home for days off. I work up north in northern Canada there, and I'm just walking in the door. You know, we talked about 2:00, and I'm like, I don't know, let's make a buffer zone, and I'm glad we did. So
yeah, that's all right. Well, good to finally connect. I know we've been talking about this for a while. So
oh yeah, man. I was the person I reached out to get you on the person I reached out to get you on, I guess, was no longer the person to
Well, right. That's all changed, and that goes par for the course. I could hardly keep up, you know, how they do things. So, but, you know, we got it done. We're here now, so.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, and I just want to thank you for your time, too. I know you're an extremely busy guy, and, you know, I'm super pumped for this, man. I've been watching Wicked Tuna for... Oh gosh, well, you're on season 13 now, right? So you know, since the beginning anyways. I'm a couple seasons behind because I don't have cable. I watch on Disney Plus. So
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. So, you know, that's all. People always have comments like that. That's all, you know, above my pay grade. We just look, we do a job, and obviously we get compensated for our time and our effort we put into that project, like any job. But you know, ultimately, you know, it's a job. You know what I mean? When it all started, the first words out of my mouth is there a check involved? So, you know, and it was a no-brainer. They, you know, they're going to look over my shoulder at work. And, you know, when the project's complete, we get a, you know, a flat rate. And, you know, again, it's not millions, but it's definitely been opportunity of a lifetime. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and
that's huge, man. That's
without
huge.
A doubt, it's been, you know, hugely beneficial to me and the family.
Of course, hey, never do anything that doesn't, you know, put food on your table or bread in your mouth. You know what I mean? Especially right now, nowadays with inflation the way it is and how expensive life has become, man. Like for me, the whole social media journey for me, right? Like it's starting to pay off now. We're starting to make money off of it. And, you know, I'm making almost as much during the day at work as I make on social media. So, it's worth it. It's been worth it, you know.
And, we're trying to figure that part out for the off season. I'd like to, you know, we talk about doing some podcasts and shit, but, you know, I just haven't had the incentive to really start. I'm sure we can figure it out if I ever get that incentivized to do so, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, there's plenty of opportunity, and I bet you would crush it. There's so many fishermen, not just in the U.S. or North America in general. Those fishermen all across the planet, right? And I bet you know, they would tune in for that. There's a market for everything, you know.
I've
learned about the internet is there is something for everyone, right? And you can capitalize on anything.
It seems that way, but that's all part of next steps, you know. I'm always doing something.
Yeah. And like you said, you're not really tech savvy either, right? So like you kind of need help getting all that stuff together anyways. And I guess that's where your kids would kind of come in and help you out or hire someone out. But your kids will probably be the best people for that anyway.
Yeah. Well, they're the ones who started me on the journey of, you know, the whole social media, you know, whether it be, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I mean, when the show started, you know, the network, they wanted us to get, you know, get all that stuff. And I, you know, I didn't even know what Twitter was. You know what I mean? I was like, what's a Twitter? And it was because of the kids. They definitely brought us up to speed on, you know, at least getting established. And literally probably for the first year, maybe even two, I mean, I didn't even have access to my own accounts. My daughter had all that stuff. And you know, because they, you know, a big part of what we were doing was interacting with the audience. And number one, I didn't know enough, but number two, they knew enough. They didn't want me to have the epic fail moment. You know what I mean? So I wasn't allowed to go on without my children's supervision.
Yeah. Hey, I can't wait to be at that stage of life, you know, where I can't do anything without my kids. They're only 6 and 4 right now.
Yeah.
I'm a millennial, so technology's right in my wheelhouse, you know, but
right. Maybe
in the future now, you know, like 50 years from now, and there's some sort of technology I don't understand. It's my grandkids.
It'll happen. It'll happen. Trust me. Cherish the young years, you know?
Yeah.
I'll never forget when my oldest daughter graduated college. You know, when she was born, I was unemployed, so the wife had to go back to work, right? And so for the first, you know, month, I was a stay-at-home dad with this new baby, right? So that's just the way it worked, you know what I mean? That was the situation. So she got out of the hospital, went right back to work because I was unemployed at the time. And, you know, it seemed like those memories, you know, holding her in one hand, giving her a bottle is what flashed through my mind when I watched her walk across the stage graduating from college.
Yeah.
And it goes like that.
Man, one day you're in a young man's body, the next day, you know, you're staring through bifocals.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. I'm like, you know, I see the reflection of my glasses in the camera, and I'm, you know, if I take it off though, I ain't gonna be able to see what's going on. I feel naked without them now.
I feel you. I have an online affiliation on TikTok and Instagram and all that with Heatwave sunglasses. I don't know if you've seen
them.
They're these here, right?
And yeah.
They're not prescriptions. They make prescriptions, but they're not prescriptions, right. And I need prescriptions, right? So when I wear those, I'm blind. But hey, like you said, if it's not making you money, then, you know, but and they make me money. Right. So I wear them for my videos, and I wear them around even when I'm not making videos.
Yeah.
You know? But for the most part, I got to be wearing prescriptions, right? And even when I'm not, I'm suffering for it.
Yeah, man.
So you said you were unemployed there back in the day. Was that like when? Now, I've done my homework a little bit here, you know, usually with the podcast. I don't do my homework. I like to come in and wing it because you know, I like to be just as surprised. But I love the show, and I'm a big fan of Captain Dave, the hard merch, man. You know, like it was you, Paul, and TJ that I was originally big fans of. And then you and Paul followed me back on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. Right. And I didn't know it then, but this was a couple of years ago. Right. And I didn't know it then was that, you know, one day we'd be having this conversation. I had no idea I was going to have a podcast. Right. But
when
I did get the podcast going, you were like one of the first people I reached out to. Right. Because I knew like the podcast is about talking to people that I find interesting, that I like, and that I think other people should also get to know. And that's why this has started. And you were one of the first people that I was. Yeah. I knew I needed to have.
Yeah. Awesome.
So as I was saying, as where that was going was, you said you were unemployed. Was that like when, you know, fishing was kind of, you know?
Well, no.
Not...
It was just, I wasn't a boat owner yet. I was still working on other boats, working, you know, I would work on deck or, you know, that was early on around the time, you know, I would run other boats. You know, again, it was before owning my own, which was shortly thereafter she was born, but. You know, I was in as a fisherman, you're an independent contractor. And actually, in the day, you know, that was a great place to be because I had a great reputation in the harbor, right, as the fill-in guy, right? So I could have my boots and my skins and my knife, and I could go on any boat in the harbor because I had a great reputation as an employee on the crewmen, and I knew the various fisheries. And what was good is they would only call me when the fishing was at its highest. And I was the first guy fired, right? Last guy hired, first guy fired. But that meant they only called me when it was time to make money, right? The regular crew would do the regular work and, you know, because fishing is up and down, right? So, again, they'd call me when they needed an extra hand because the fishery was peaking and they were catching a lot of fish and they needed an extra guy. And then... once it kind of came back down to the lower levels, you know, I'd get cut free and then I'd have to go look for another site. And, you know, that's just, it's actually a great way to be because, again, there guys are only calling you on the phone when they're making money. Hey, we're making money. We need an extra guy. So you know, for those years as a crewman, it was a great position to be in.
Absolutely. And how long did you work, like, as, you know, like a crewman or?
Well, I mean, I had my first job in a boat when I was 11, right?
Yeah.
It was in charter boats and party boats. And, you know, I just had, it all came from a passion for fishing, right? Just one thing led to another. And, you know, again, then life happens, you graduate high school. You know, it was probably my high school years I stayed towards that charter party boat fishing industry, and that was good for that. But then life happens, you get married, you have kids, you want to make some more money, so I wind up doing more towards the commercial end of the industry, again, simply to make more money, you know, more money year round. You know, the charter party boat industry, especially here in New England, you know, it's a 4-month season in the summer. Right. So, you know, at least commercial fishing, you can fish year round.
Yep.
And, you know, commercial fishing is definitely a different environment now, which I think is unfortunate. And again, that's a whole nother pretty boring discussion how fisheries got that way. But, you know, now it's become a game with these, you know, individual quotas. You know, if you haven't got millions of dollars, you know, when I get into fishing, if you had a desire and a passion, you could get into fishing to make a living. Now it takes so much money to get into fishing. If you have the money to get into fishing, you don't need to fish for a living.
Yeah, you know, so it takes the passion out of it.
I think it's unfortunate. It makes it become, you know, what we went through was rapid fire consolidation. And, you know, it became a thing where just, you know, it's a big corporate owned thing now. The independent guys are gone, you know, for the most part.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a few hanging on, but it's definitely changed from when I entered the industry. And I think that's unfortunate. But again, that's a whole nother long story. And it's a pretty boring topic, but maybe someday I'll cover it in my own podcast. Right?
Man, if you ever get a podcast, you got to let me know. I want to listen. I got to listen. Right, you know, right. I'm not a big fisherman. But right. I do like to fish, like, you know, and right. I don't eat fish. I don't like the taste of fish, right? So yeah. I like to fish, catch and release, right? Or I go with others who like to eat fish and catch and stuff like that, right? And, man, like, I know you were part of the whole, it must have been so cool being a part of that whole wave, you know, where you learned a lot at the beginning, right? Because at like in the 80s, I think it was, right? You guys had overfished. You guys had depleted the population of fish, right? Well, yeah, I mean,
that was even before us in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, we were at the bottom. We, you know, when I entered the fishery, I think a way to describe it is, you know, we were left with smashed and broken pieces, right? It was the generations before us. And again, it wasn't done with malice. You got to remember, this is where society was at, right? Yeah. And those, you know, during that same time, you know, remember we had ocean dumping was a thing. All the trash bags that we now, you know, you collect them on the street, all the cities like Boston and New York and the suburbs would send their trash into the city. They would pile them on barges and they would dump them in the ocean, right? That's where, you know, they just thought the ocean was so vast you couldn't hurt it. Now, you know, again, today, these days, we think, how could people think like that? But that's because we're all the next generation. But
yeah.
You know, they never thought you could catch all the fish in the sea. They, millions of pounds a day, every day, you know, all the cities did it. They brought put the trash that we all collect on the curve. It would go to barges and they would bring it out. And, you know, those dumping grounds are still on our nautical charts.
Yeah.
You know, fishermen have been cleaning up those dumping grounds for decades. You know, those areas, that trash moves out of those areas and gets stuck in our nets. And, you know, my generation was the one, you know, we'd pile that trash on the decks and bring it back to the docks and put it in dumpsters all over again. Right.
Yep.
You know, never mind. And there was instances. I mean, what went on? There was times when, you know, fishermen pulled up barrels out of those areas and entire boats became sick. Right. Because, I mean, again, it was a different time. They were literally dumping toxic waste out there.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. And, you know. And this is only 3 miles from land. You know what I mean? It's not like that's just what they did. That was society. But obviously now it's a society. We've come light years from that. And in my opinion, you know, that's probably, we talk, they hear about all these plastics in the ocean. And again, now all of us who boat nowadays, you know, we don't even think twice about, you know, we don't throw stuff overboard. Everybody brings stuff home. I'm sure, you know, 9 out of 10 guys, when they see a plastic trash bag floating in the ocean, you know, they make an effort to pull it out of the water and put it in with, right? That's, again, yeah, just society, right? But
don't,
that's
where
a lot of these plastics that they talk about in the ocean, you know, I believe at least contribute to that mess. Because, again, for decades, that's just what they did. They collected it on the curve, you put it on a barge, and, you know, the barges were a train is 7 barges long, we just run right out and dump in the ocean. That's what they did with the trash.
That's unbelievable, man. That's insane, you know, like to think about, you know, we're only a couple of generations away from that when that was happening, right?
Right, but I mean, like, that's the good thing. You know, when it comes, like, you know, you've been watching this windmill discussion and stuff, and,
yep,
you know, again, as a society, we're evolving, right? And, you know, things perfect? No, but, you know, we're always going the right direction. And, you know, again, with these windmills, like, I look at that as a step backward. That's, you know, now we're putting stuff out there that don't belong again. And again, my comparison to that is it's ocean dumping all over again. But,
yep,
again, that's a tirade for another time. You know what I mean? But I don't think, you know, those are being sold as, you know, the solution when, look, we all understand, again, on a practical level, on a basic level, alternate forms of power are going to be part of our future. And yep, reducing, yep, carbon, like, we all understand, okay, that's a good concept, and we're getting there, right? But it's all about appropriate solutions in appropriate areas. Yep. And then, you know, again, now you'd have to go back into the fisheries management discussion in the history, you know, since 1972, when the Sustainable Fisheries Act was implemented by Congress, 100-0, right? So unanimous vote. You know, that's the laws that change things in this country when it comes to the oceans and fisheries and management, right? So, you know, for that 50 years, we've been learning how to be good stewards of the resource and be good managers of the ocean, right? Yep. And we have, you know, areas that have been closed in some cases for 40 years that are areas, you know, where fish reproduce and, you know, they're considered essential fish habitat, because we know, you know, and again, and if you go back in time, we thought these would be the end of us. Now we realize these types of areas were the things that saved us as fishermen, right? You know, again, and this is a long, boring story over many decades, right?
But again,
when you look at that and you look what they're doing with these wind farms, I mean, you know, it's like we're soiling, in my mind, in my opinion, you know, we have all this good that was done for 50 years and we're just soiling it all with these wind turbines. It's, you know, and again, if you've been following, and, you know, I've got to be careful how I discuss this for obvious reasons. I speak for myself, not my employer, when it comes to things, right? And yes, this is important to me, you know, what's going on in the ocean, but I certainly don't speak for my employer, but this is what I believe. So, you know, I honestly believe it enough too, is, you know, I've said it, you know, I said, this is a hill to die on here, because if we screw that up, then there is no future for guys like me. Or, again, I'm always thinking about, what about the guys who were like me, who are coming after me, right? Just a kid with a dream who wanted to go fishing. That's who I'm looking out for, because, you know, fishing worked out good for me. Why wouldn't I want to make sure, you know, those other kids coming behind me, not only my kids, right? Sure, my kids have kind of a birthright. They're going to go right into it, and it'd be great to see them on the show, right? And that's great, but, you know, I didn't have that. My dad sold insurance. So I would like to see the guys, the kids with a dream behind me that have that dream to go fishing. I believe they should be able to access that dream.
Hell yeah.
And absolutely, that's why we have, you know, the positions I do.
Hell yeah. So I've seen all your tweets about the, you know, the windmills and stuff like that. I work in the Canadian oil and gas industry, right? And
yep.
like, so the Canadian oil and gas industry, you know, we have some of the lowest carbon emissions on the planet. And like, I work on a vac truck specifically. I work in environmental pretty much. So I go up and I clean up the spills the oil field makes. In Canada, the guidelines the guidelines for all that are minuscule, right? Like if a little bit hits the ground, hey, it's a disaster, right?
Right.
Also, during the 2015 downturn and the 2008 downturn, you know, you had all this innovation. The oil field had to evolve or die, right? And it's doing that every day. We talked about that a couple weeks ago on the podcast, and you know, the Alberta oil and gas industry, or the Canadian oil and gas industry, is actually leading the pack when it comes to renewable energies, right? They're investing so much into green technology, windmills on land. I'm still not a fan of, like you are, of them in the water. Right. Windmills are bad news. Right. You know, solar farms, stuff like that. Now there's a law, right? And I'm not sure if it's everywhere, but you're not supposed to put a windmill within 500 meters of a family dwelling, right? Because of the sonic waves it gives off causes diseases such as cancer, right? And this has been proven, right? So they try to build them as far away as they can from family dwellings. So they're not good for family dwellings. So that's humans and animals. Right. Birds are constantly running into them. Right. So
no, why they want to put them at sea, out of sight, out of mind. And again, it's those of us who live and work there. And again, let's face it. If you're a guy, you know, guys spend days on end at sea on boats. Yep. You know, when I was younger, you know, these days I don't do it as much because I don't have to, but when I was that young man, you know, we do 10 days on the boat, home for 2 days, and back out for another 10. You know, the years would go by click, but
oh yeah,
you know, again, that's our backyard, right? Yep. And the thing was, you know, and part of the attraction was being a fisherman was, you know, is being out there and being, you know, being able to work in that environment. Even, and let's face it, right? Like there was times in my life where, you know, I would look at other boats, right? And these guys who made a living somewhere else, but have these beautiful million-dollar boats, right? Especially in the tuna thing, right? And there was times they have in a family that, geez, I wish maybe, you know, I don't want to say regrets, but I thought about it. I'd be lying if I didn't, right? That, geez, I wish I made more money. Who doesn't, right?
Who doesn't?
Right? I wish I made more money so I could do this or I could do that, right? But ultimately, I always loved and I'm very proud of, you know, being a fisherman all these years and being, you know, part of just one small part of Gloucester's, you know, 400-year history as a fishing community, right? So, you know, we're always blessed to that. And now, again, I see that as a huge risk with these wind turbines. And again, I'm not against alternate sources of energy. I just believe, you know, appropriate solutions in appropriate areas. And I don't believe doing what we're about to do to these marine ecosystems, you know, is appropriate. It's far too much at risk. And, you know, it's funny you talk about oil and gas. People love to go with the whataboutism and they bring up the oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico, right? Now, you know, here's the thing. What people don't realize often, and we know this, is, you know, like that bottom, those seabeds, 300 or 400 feet down, were carved by glaciers. The contours, the structure that's there, and it mirrors the land off the coast, you know, where it exists, right? So you get down in Texas and Florida, it's flat. There isn't much structure. It's a lot of sand in soft sedimentary bottom, right? So yes, you pluck an oil rig in the middle of that environment, you do have, you know, you create an oasis in the middle of a desert and life thrives there. And you can make that argument that yes, that is indeed true, right? But now you look at the coastline as we go up north here and, you know, the coastline up here is just, you know, the seabed is just like the land up here. There's areas of rock, there's areas of gravel, there's areas of sand, there's areas of mud, there's areas of silt. And again, that's what makes our fishing so fantastic. Each one of those individual habitats is ideal habitat for certain species. And as a fisherman, that's the first thing you learn. Because even if you're fishing with a big net, if you don't put the net where the fish are, the net's going to come up empty. So you have, you know, that's one of the basic foundries of being a fisherman. And again, this even goes to fishing experiences you might have fishing in your own backyard. You learn to, hey, I know this is a good spot because why? The fish, you know, like going there. And, you know, nothing at sea happens randomly. You know what I mean? And I think people on land lose sight of that. They look out there and all they see is water and they have this perception, oh, that it's all the same and there's plenty of it. You know, the truth is something quite different. If you look at the vastness of the oceans, you know, 75% of the earth is covered by water. And out of all that water, only about 20% is where 99% of the life exists. That's the rest of it's all too deep.
That's right? Wild.
So when you think about it like that, I'm talking on a global scale, these areas that we know that are, you know, relatively shallow, when, you know, in oceanic terms, 600 feet of water is shallow before you drop off the edge of the continental shelf and you know, you wind up in 10, 12,000 feet of water and it just keeps getting deeper, you know, as you cross the oceans, right? So this, you know, 600 feet above, that's such, you know, when you blow it out on a global scale, it's a tiny little sliver. And it's, you know, we should be protecting that.
Absolutely.
Not, you know, and again, you know, they people love to go, well, what about oil rigs? What about oil rigs? And, you know, again, they need, when we have this discussion, there needs to be some practicality. Let's face it, you know, energy consumption isn't going away overnight. You know what I mean? And yeah. Energy consumption as a whole has saved millions of lives, right? You know, modern medicine, you know, heating homes to keep people from freezing to death, right? There's a lot of benefits, but it's these extreme views that try to derail you from even having a rational discussion about what's appropriate.
Oh, I have those conversations every day. I work in the oil field,
right?
You come across those extreme conversations every day. And, you know, like, you know, it's hard not to get caught up in the echo chamber once in a while, right? Because you get all these guys in one spot that all, you know, like, hey, you know what? Like this political person, this political thing or policy over here is going to affect my job later on down the line, right? Or this policy or that politician or this, that, the next thing, they're going to affect our job, right? And what scares people more than anything in the world, right? Losing their livelihood, right?
Yeah.
So you know, they tend to put the blinders on and ignore logic, right? To protect what's helping put bread on the table. Right. And, you know, like, yeah, I've had that conversation too. And we've all probably been there where we've just nodded our head and agreed, right?
You just don't want to
disagree and when the masses are, you know, whatever. But, you know, the conversation is starting to shift a little bit, you know, like maybe there is an end game here, but it's not going to be a complete like shutdown of it. We are going to start moving away from it a little bit as technology moves on. And the oil and gas companies are going to be the ones leading the charge.
Right. And, you know, the thing is, though, is like even when you look at, you know, the simple fact that if you're going to construct a windmill, the vast majority of those, you know, those composite products, they build them are petroleum based.
Yeah.
If you want your windmill, you got to have a certain amount of oil because, you know, again, and then there's, you know, transportation and actual, installation. None of that happens without the petroleum industry, right? They don't just drop out of the skies. It's not fairy dust, you know? And I just find it ironic that people lose track of that. You know what I mean? That, so, you know, again, at the same point, yes, we can take steps and go in this direction, and that's a great thing. But where it becomes problematic is, you know, again, now when you get governments forcing things, you know, ocean industrialization, which is what these wind turbines are. Look, in on the East Coast here, we're looking at as many as 2,700 power generation, you know. So these are power stations, each of them the size of a skyscraper, 2,700 of them, right? And, you know, I think, you know, estimates are it's about 70 billion tons of construction materials to put these things out there. And nobody wants to pause. You know, we see all these things happening now, and there's the whole whale discussion and these whale deaths. You know, that's been the biggest red flag for us. We've got 2,000-year events occurring at the same time. Yeah. They overlap each other in time and area, right? You've got, you know, whale strandings, which since 2016 average about 20 a year, to now in the little over a year since the construction process, and part of that process is the sonar mapping. Since this process began, you know, we're up over 100 whales, large whales, and thousands of smaller marine mammals. And nobody's even talking about, you know, the anecdotal reports from fishermen are, you know, they're seeing, you know, clam beds die-offs and scallop bed die-offs, right? That, you know, again, no, we can't prove, hey, this is what's causing that, but it's all going on in the same area. And, you know, at least at the very least, you know, let's pause and make sure, because there isn't, we don't have the science to prove or disprove this simply doesn't exist at this point. So, Okay, let's create it then. Let's find out. Prove me a liar, right? You say it's not it. Okay, let's do the science and make Captain Dave a liar, right? Or vice versa, you know what I mean? I'm willing to take the pill either way.
Yep. No, that's, and absolutely, you know, I don't know if you've seen, if you go on TikTok much or not, but there was a whole TikTok page dedicated to Neil the Seal over in Australia, I believe it was this year. Why was Neil the Seal on land so much? He found his way to landing. He never left, right? He was stranded there. And then one day someone had to put him back. There was a whole TikTok dedicated to Neil the Seal.
I didn't see that. I'll have to look. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was just seen, like, you know, flippering around town and ended up in random people's yards all the time. And he'd go off into the water. Then he'd come back up and he was lost. Right. And people were just like, someone made a whole TikTok account about it. I just want to give a big shout out or not a shout out, but talk about for a second about the cargo ship that hit the bridge in Baltimore early this morning there. You know, a few lives have been lost so far. Just want to, like, you know, send out my condolences to whoever's listening that may know someone.
Absolutely. That's awful. Anytime there's a maritime tragedy, you know, that's terrible. And then, you know, I guess it's still unclear. I, you know, all I've been hearing is bits and pieces, but, you know, so it seems like you have people involved in the maritime trades that may have possibly perished, and you have, you know, possibly workers on the bridge and, you know, the vehicles that may have been on, you know, so it's still so unclear. But yeah, that's an awful tragedy.
They were saying, thank God it was 2 a.m. and not 2 p.m, right? Because could have been a catastrophe.
Or even 5 a.m., you know, that rush hour traffic.
Yeah, three hours later, yeah, and it's a whole other ball game, right? And that's pretty wild, right? So, so just, you know, condolences and shout out to those guys, you know. You know, thoughts and prayers, I guess, if we can say that. I don't know. But I wanted to get into your boat. Yeah. I love the boat, the hard merch, right? And this whole time, right, I'm thinking, man, the hard merch, what a badass name for your boat, right? And then you know, I came across something. It's not even your first boat.
Yeah.
Right? You had the Angela Joseph, right?
Angelica Joseph, yeah.
The Angelica Joseph, yeah. Angelica. Yeah. Wow, I can't believe I said Angela. Wow. Yeah. You had the Angelica Joseph boat, and then you know, the hard merch. When I read that it has a double meaning to it, right? I thought, you know, when I was, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, when I was watching Wicked Tuna and even up until recently, I thought, man, hard merch, right? Like the boat was hard to get, but that is not even that. That's part of it. But, like, man, like, hard merch means, you know, like, you're going after something that that's hard to get, right? Yeah. Like,
it, you know, that's not even it really, right? You know, look, I'll admit for the show, right? The name worked out beautifully, right? Because it was a cool name for that boat, right? And I'll admit that. But remember, I named the boat, you know, 10 years before the show ever came about, right? It wasn't like I had some sort of master plan. I mean, I never knew the show was coming, right? I mean, even that whole opportunity, that wasn't even on the fairy tale list, you know, being a part of a show, even bullshitting with the guys at the bar, right? You know, that wasn't on the bingo card, you know what I mean? That wasn't even on the bullshit list, right? So it's all just, to me, amazing that it ever happened. But, you know, I named the boat because, you know, like at the time, we had a seafood display auction in Gloucester, right? So what that meant is every day fishers would go out, like myself, and we'd land in the afternoon, and 5 days a week there was an auction. And buyers would come from as far away as New York, and they'd go to the auction floor, and at 4 a.m. they'd start poking and prodding the fish. And, you know, in the fisheries, a fish that is cold, hard, and firm is worth the most money because it's been the best taken care of. A soft fish is a hot fish or an old fish, and nobody wants an old fish, right? So the hard fish generally paid the most money in that type of auction arena. And look, as a businessman, that's simply how I competed with much bigger boats that got much more fish, much more volume. You know, as a fisherman, that auction scenario was great because if me and my team brought in a better product than yours, we would get more money per pound for it. So it's great incentive. The buyers get a better product. We get more money for the same product that you were selling, you know, right alongside me, but it may not be as good a quality, right? So it was simple business. But that's where I kind of got the name. The idea was, all right, you know, and my boat used to dominate the auction board. We'd get those top prices, you know, more often than not, because, you know, I would teach my crew, look, if you guys want to make the same money, I mean, more money for catching the same fish, it's extra effort for a crew, you know, to take all the steps. And again, that could be a whole nother podcast talking about how we did that. But the end goal was we had that hard product. We had the hard, firm fish. And the buyers used to love that. They love that nickname. You know, they wanted those buyers would, I saw fist fights a few times in the chairs, guys bidding on our limited lots of fish because they wanted that fish. It was the good stuff.
Right? Man, that's a badass explanation.
Now, the nerd part is I'm also a Star Wars fan, right?
Yeah.
Now, and people, some of the, you know, I have fans that have figured this out. So I came from the Star Wars, you know, generation, right? When Star Wars came out, I saw the movie 17 times standing in line, right? Along with everybody else's grandparents out there for the young guys watching, right? Because that's how we watched it. When it went away for the movies, you know, you didn't have a DVD. It wouldn't come on TV for another year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's how it was. But so I've been a Star Wars fan. You have the books, and all the books fill in the gaps in between the movies. And I'm not a big reader, but, you know, that sci-fi, especially Star Wars, was my guilty pleasure, right? I liked reading. I actually hate reading, but I like Star Wars so much I would read the book, right? So there's a 3-book series on the bounty hunters, okay? And it's all the familiar bounty hunters that we know about, you know, and it's just kind of more backstories. The 3rd book in the series, the title of the book is High Merchandise. So that's really where between those two little stories, bringing in the good, hard, firm fish in the book title, that's where the name came from. Because, like, I get it. Bounty Hunter is a good name for a boat, right? Especially for a commercial boat.
Yep.
The problem is there's already about, even in Gloucester Harbor, there's 20 boats named Bounty Hunter. So, again, it was my little spin on Bounty Hunter. I named it High Merchandise. And again, I'll admit, you know, now you fast forward to TV world, I have the name copyrighted and trademarked, and you've got Disney you know, doing movies now about the books. And now I've had the name in use for a lot longer because I've had it copyrighted with the boat name, you know, as soon as I knew we were going to be on TV. That's all pretty expensive. So I guess that's my retirement plan. If Disney ever does the movie about that book, they're going to have to come for me to for the name permission. So.
Oh, man, wouldn't that be so cool? Isn't that cool? Like, Disney has to go to you for permission.
Yeah.
That's
the thing. Yeah, that's if they ever go down that road.
Yeah absolutely. It's well, you know. Funny.
But, you know, see, I'm such a nerd. If they say, all right, we'll give you a little costume and let you be in the background, I'd probably sell out for peanuts.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's funny. Everything comes to this until it's like, well, you know what? Put me in the movie and I'm there. You know what? I don't even care if anyone sees my face.
But I'll be good to go.
Don't even care if anyone sees my face. Just give me a part.
Right.
No, that's awesome, man. Hey, I got a question for you. Do you know what viscosity is?
What?
Viscosity. Do you know what viscosity is?
Not the technical definition, but right, that's it's how they measure I'm struggling to describe it, but you know, with the oil, right? It's how thick the oil is. Is that?
Well, how thick the mud would be that they put down hole when they're drilling.
Okay.
So, where I'm going with is the podcast is sponsored by the Mudman, right? And the Mudman came up and he took all the hard work and all the guesswork out of measuring, you know, the viscosity of the fluids going down.
Okay.
Right. And so the Mudman sponsors the podcast. And, you know, we do this bit every episode around the same time where we talk about, you know, viscosity for about a minute. And the Mudman, you know, www.mudmarket.com.
Okay.
And, like, stand up fella, man. I wish everybody could get to know this guy. You know, I owe a lot to him. The headphones, the mic, before we were just raw dogging it.
Okay.
And, you know, he's down with the cause of the podcast, and I love that. And, you know, so shout out to the Mudman, you know, for all your drilling fluid and laboratory testing equipment needs. The Mudman has your back.
The Mudman, I like that. He must have good t-shirts.
He does. Oh man, he does. I'm moving tomorrow actually, or I would show you one. They're all packed away, and some of them are at the new house already. I'm only moving 10 blocks, so I'll send you a picture of what the logo looks like. Yeah, he's got two. Picture the John Deere logo. You know the John Deere logo. Picture the John Deere logo, but with a guy in a hard hat. It's a silhouette of a guy in a hard hat, like testing. You know, like it looks pretty cool. And then the MLB logo too. The MLB logo was like his first. One, or was it MLB or MLB? Yeah, the MLB logo, same thing. Guy in the hard hat, just a silhouette of him, like pouring into the testing cup.
Nice.
I'll show it to you. I'll send you a picture on Twitter. He's a stand up individual, man. The whole point of this podcast, man, is like, you know, to get to know people and to, you know, maybe humanize people that others might not think that are, you know, being able to be approached or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I go after a lot of creators that I see and I like, blue collar guys, you know, and I think they're very blue collar. Like, fishing is not easy work, you know? And like, what's the largest fish you've ever brought in?
The biggest is a 1200 pound bluefin.
1200 pound bluefin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, what's cool is, you know, the next you're going to ask, how much should we get paid? And how much, right? But look, the cool thing about that was when my son was still in school. He was 10 or 11 years old, and Jay was working for me, his nephew, who you see in the show. He had just graduated from high school, right? So, you know, Jay's mom used to watch the kids when they were younger, and my wife and I were both working, right? She was the mom we dropped him off with. So, you know, they played together when they were kids. But, you know, they always came fishing with me, you know, especially Jay going fishing with his Uncle Dave. But so it was a rare occasion. I had the two boys together on the boat, and we, you know, we're fishing for the weekend because, you know, otherwise the kids had to be in school. And, you know, we wound up catching that fish, and there's a whole story in catching that particular fish. But, you know, the nuts and bolts of it is, you know, now me and my son and my nephew to this day, you know, that's the largest fish of our lives, and we caught it together. And, you know, that's a great story that we'll all take to our graves. You know what I mean? Like, that's one of those stories. So never mind that we got paid for it, made a paycheck and all that. All that's good.
Doesn't matter.
Right? It's just, it's a great fishing story too.
That's what I'm saying. A 1,200 pound fish to bring in, that couldn't have been easy. Yeah. Right? That
it's easy for what we do. It's, you know, I mean, for us, we catch those fish. So having the opportunity to, you know, find one and land it that big is great, like landing any trophy. But, you know, again, I don't see it as hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's what we do. It's what we do for work. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, it's not hard. It's not hard. It's the biggest investment we make is time.
Oh, man, believe me, like working away, I go away for 4 to 6 weeks at a time, right?
Yeah.
And I come home for a week. This time was only 18 days because I got to move tomorrow. And so, like, the biggest investment you make in the oil field is time, right? Yep. Like, throw the money is great. You know, the money is what drives us there. I say this a lot. The reason why I joined the oil field or started in the oil field and the reason why I'm still in the oil field all these years, it's been 12 years, are two totally different things. My reason has evolved, right?
Yep.
I started because I wanted extra money in my pocket. And along the way, I had a family, right? And now this is the best way I know how to provide for my family, right? Like, and a lot of that is time away. And unfortunately, you know, my wife gets to be a stay-at-home mom and she gets to take care of the kids, which is, I love that. But unfortunately, I have to, you know, sacrifice my time. Wow. And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, why are you making videos about it? Why are you so proud of it? And I think I just said why, right? Because I sacrifice so much time away and I'm able to provide such a good life. You know what I mean? There's only one way to go about doing that and be happy about it, right? And that's with pride.
Yeah. You know,
I go out every day, I put my boots on it, whether it's 2 o'clock in the morning, whether it's noon, whether it's 9 o'clock at night, I put my boots on. I go out with my head held high, my chest puffed out, and I'm like, for my family, and I ride into battle, right? And that's the best way to describe it, man. There's a lot of pride in what we do, and a lot of people don't understand that. And I think, you know, I'm just starting to understand that the last couple of years, right? So around the pandemic, we talk about it all the time. The pandemic changed everything. And for me, I always watched Wicked Tuna. But my daughter, my youngest daughter, was born 2 days before they declared it a pandemic. So I was off for the first couple months anyway, because I got laid off before I was set to fly back to work. All I did for the first 2 months of my daughter's life, my youngest daughter's life, during the pandemic, I had during nap times and feeding times and whenever she was asleep. All I did was watch Wicked Tuna on National Geographic. My wife would come out watching Wicked Tuna again, huh? I'm like, shh, they're about to harpoon it. Be quiet, right? hold on. I want to hear how much they make per pound off this. We can talk in a minute, right? Yeah. And then I went back to work, and it was that summer when I went back to work is when I started my social media journey. We're coming up on 4 years of this, and so I started my social media journey, and it was around that time where I lost a lot of the pride in what I was doing. I didn't know I was lost myself, right? Because the pandemic made it hard to go back home. I was flying at the time, flying back and forth at the time until I moved my family back closer. But I didn't know if I wanted to be in the industry anymore. I didn't know if I needed to be there or belong there. And then social media started and I found my people, other people that work in the oil field like me, making content. We're all going through the same thing, all joking around about the same thing. Whether it's over in the Middle East somewhere or down south in Texas or right here in Alberta, you know, we're all going through the same thing and we're all talking about it. And that's when I realized these are my people and this is where I want to be. This is where I need to be. This is where I'm going to be. And I'm going to be here with a great sense of pride, right? So, and so I went all in on it, right? I was all in before, but I was kind of starting to like fall out a little. But then, you know, now I'm like, I'm all in, right? And I see that same thing with fishing, man, with you. And I love watching that. You're my favorite person on the show by far.
Thank you.
And
thank
you. And I always watch when Dave and the boys and Angelica comes out and on the hard merch, and I can't remember the name of that boat you guys had during the pandemic. I believe it was during the pandemic where the hard merch went down. The Falcon. That's
right. What now look at now. See, you got to remember since 2018. When Joe graduated for college, I had the two boats. We had the Falcon and the Hard Merch. Now, the boys run the Hard Merch. We have a business. Filming only is a snapshot of our overall year. Filming is 6 or 8 weeks in the middle of our season, right? Now, for TV world, they like the idea of Captain Dave fishing with his kids, right? That's our character. That's our story. You know, in reality, as soon as before and after the cameras are there, the boys run that boat and I run the other boat. And they do, they do a great job. You know, that's one of my regrets. They don't get the credit they deserve. You know, the truth is those boys kick ass. I showed them the basics, but they certainly, and let's face it, it's because they're young and hungry, right? They're in the, you know, my son's in his 20s, right? And, you know, just for instance, like the last 3 years in a row, you know, those boys have had 20 fish on the dock before any one of us other guys, myself included, had our first fish for the season.
Wow.
So they're out there kicking ass and taking names. You know, in a TV world, you don't even get to know about that. You know what I mean?
Wow, that's remarkable.
I have to listen. You know, we run a successful... You know, since the show happened, I changed my business model. As a fisherman, it's always been about taking advantage of opportunity. You know, one of the things when this started, I didn't think it was go this long. But from a business aspect, I said, look, basically, you know, we've always done a few charters because that's my core roots when I started as a young kid as a fisherman, right? So I had a history and a background there, and I had the license that's required to do it. And again, as we rolled with the punches with commercial fishing, we tried to make up for that. I just didn't have a big fancy boat. I couldn't compete with $1 million boat owners. But my shtick was, well, look, you want to go with the part-timers? You want to go with a guy like me who fishes 300 days a year? And I had my clientele who, you know, look, we weren't fast and fancy, but if you want to get covered with blood, they come with me, right? I had my guys. I built up, you know, a list. But, you know, so when the show happened, basically, you know, I looked at it like, all right, we're going to be a charter boat with a TV commercial that runs 20 weeks a year. Why wouldn't I build off that business model? And that's our true business model now. You know, the boys, we got two boats and we bang out 150 charters a year on each boat. That's been one of the biggest blessings to come from participating in the TV opportunity. And again, that's the business sense. And then now,
last year, we launched our seafood
website, angelicaseafoods.com, where you can, you know, we'll ship fish anywhere in the continental United States, not in Canada yet. There's a whole list of regulations for, you know, once you leave the country, but anywhere in the States, we'll ship fresh seafood overnight. And that's been successful enough where, you know, we're on the cusp now after about a year. You know, we hope to next month open our retail location for our seafood business in Gloucester. So, you know, those have all been the next steps and next evolutions of that original opportunity to just be on that show, which, again, I never planned for. But when the opportunity presented itself, that's how I started to think, you know, how can I make the most of it?
Dave's reach went from just like that, the East Coast or Gloucester area to like worldwide, you know, everybody watches.
Now look,
man,
the show it's Nat Geo's number one show.
Wow.
And I believe the stats are it's 151 countries in 48 different languages.
Wow.
Right? Now that sounds amazing, right? But the truth, you know, in TV world, the real money market is that US market. You know, that's the valuable market for any network. But it is, you know, pretty astounding to think, you know, again, you know, because I have a public email and all that, right? You know, I get fan mail from around the world. You know, I've gotten, you know, some of the ones I've gotten fan letters from families in Pakistan who watch the show. You know what I mean? And you know, it's like, what, they don't even have much water there, do they? And you know, they're watching the show, and you know, the title translates into, I think it was Fighting Finns, you know, when it, you know, and it, when, in Hindi, that's what the title translates into. And you know, they were complimenting me on how well I was speaking Hindi. And the thing is, I don't speak Hindi, but again, with technology these days, right? You know, you learn that, you know, again, and I learned this being a part of it. In some regions, you know, they like the show, you know, is in English and it has subtitles in their language. In other reasons, you know, they dub the voices in the native language, right? And with technology, they couldn't tell that it wasn't actually me. You know, they thought I was speaking Hindi. That's how, yeah, that's how good tech, you know, it's not like the old creature double features when we were kids, when we're watching, you know, the old, right, exactly, right. which is just funny. And again, like, I didn't know that until I found out.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Like, yeah. Wow, good for you, man. Like, you're an opportunist, right? And yeah, and that's yeah. same as me. I like to, you know, I like to experience different things, and I'll go down any avenue, right?
Yeah.
And open any door and go down any trail. That the podcast is very much like that, you know. Like, I always compare it to, you know, most podcasts are very interview style, and you ask certain questions, and that's kind of it. But the end, man, it's like going for a walk and you bump down. It's like bumping into an old friend, right? You're going for a walk, you bump into an old friend, and you know, you have a conversation. You can't plan that conversation, right? Because you haven't seen this person in forever. You don't know you're bumping into them. Well, then, you know, you walk down this alleyway, and then you go down another corridor, and there's someone else, right? It's go on a walking trail. There's another trail off the trail. You keep going down that. You see another one. You go down that. You go. You never know where it's going to end up, man. And I love that about the podcast world, or my podcast in general. But I love listening to podcasts that are very much like that. And I love being a part of something like that. You know, it's allowed me to rub shoulders with the great Dave Marciano. It's I don't know if you've watched Ed the Sock back in the day.
No.
Ed the Sock was his talking hand puppet. He was very vulgar. He's not vulgar anymore. But, you know, he was on the podcast last year. This time, actually 1 year ago today, the episode that I filmed with him came out. And that was episode 11, maybe 9, maybe it was 9, 8, one of those, between 8 and 11 anyway, one of those ones. And we're on 66, 67 now, right? Nice. And we're one a week, every Tuesday, one drops, you know, and we haven't missed a week yet. And I love it. It's great having conversations with other hardworking people who, you know, love their family, do it for their family, do what they're passionate about, you know? Yeah. And that's huge.
Right.
Yeah, man.
All right.
So season 13 just dropped.
Right. Season 13, Sunday nights, 9 p.m. on National Geographic Channel. I think this Sunday coming up is going to be episode 5.
Four or five. I think it might be four.
It's going to be four.
Here Come the Herd was episode 3, right?
I don't know. You know, I no, I do watch Sunday nights when I can, but last weekend we were traveling back from Oregon. So, but look, it's on now, Sunday nights, 9 p.m., National Geographic Channel. And of course, people who do stream on Disney, you know, it won't start streaming until after the show airs, you know, because Disney bought National Geographic, right? And that happened 5 years ago, and that's all crap, I don't even understand. But because the next question is, when does it start streaming, Captain Dave? When does it start streaming? So once it shows in its entirety, it'll premiere in its entirety on the National Geographic Channel, and then they'll start streaming it on Disney Plus.
I can find it other places myself. I have a stick. Yeah. Plug it in, and I just
comment on anything like that. I can either confirm than to deny the existence of such platforms.
Yeah.
I have to play the company man here, so.
Hey, man, yeah, you play it well.
What you do is you, right? I just,
Yep. So I just want to, you know, man, thank you for, you know, being so gracious with your time. I know it's dinner over there and you got to get going. I like to finish the podcast up with one last question. And, you know, it stumps a lot of people. So, you know, Mount Rushmore, you're very familiar with Mount Rushmore being American. Mount Rushmore has four of the most influential people in American history up on the rock there. If you could have four people on your own Mount Rushmore that you look up to, inspire me, or that inspire you, who would they be and why? Who inspires Dave Marciano?
Ernest Hemingway.
Whoa, you don't like to read. That's awesome.
Well, you know, I'm really not much of a reader, right? Yeah, I actually flunked out of school. And you know, I was flunking out. And when I was young, we were very frustrated. And, you know, we didn't know about ADD and all the crap they got these days, right? But it turns out I simply had an eye problem, right? And, you know, I was already through high school and failed through most of it, or, you know, in the first couple of years. And they discovered I had an eye problem. They called it conjunctions insufficiency. Basically, one eye would shut down while I would read. And I just, as a kid, I thought I was stupid. Because, you know, we all read the book in the class, the paragraph in class, and the other kids would finish faster than me. And even when I did finish, I could never retain what I just read, right? So, again, once we found this out, they gave me these eye exercises, and I got both my eyes working. And part of the exercises, once we corrected the problem, was to read. So, Shogun was the very first book I read, followed by Ernest Hemingway, Old Man and the Sea.
Wow.
So that's why those things stick with me. It's those, you know, it was those little things, those little moments in life where things change. But, you know, again, and I actually hated reading because, again, I had to read to correct that eye problem. Right. So then there was a time where I didn't read nothing, you know, once I was through school. But again, then, you know, to stay in with the movies, I picked up the Star Wars books just because I liked them. But I actually dislike reading. But, you know, what are
good
you
going to do?
You like the story, but you hate to read.
Good for you. No. Right. That's good that you didn't get frustrated and put it down.
Ernest Hemingway. I guess next would be. No, my dad would have to be up there, right? Because he's the man who made me the man I am today. And he's, you know, and I was a train wreck as a kid because I had all those problems, you know, being right? My sisters all went to college and all, you know, and were very, you know, good at school. I wasn't so good at the whole student thing. You know, I was expelled from three high schools, right?
Wow.
Before I finally graduated. You know, yeah, we'll save those stories for the books, right? But the old man was going to send me off to military school, and he drove me down to North Carolina and showed me the school I was going to go to. And I begged him for one more chance, and I told him I wouldn't mess up. And I barely made it through. I went to Gloucester High School because I was already into fishing. And I had to pay tuition, $1,800 a year, to graduate my final 2 years of high school because I was out of the district. And because I was always working and into fishing, you know, he made me pay that tuition out of my own pocket. So,
wow.
Yeah, the real story will come in the book someday. So, all right. So, what did we say? Ernest Hemingway, my dad. And I would say, back in my day, Evel Knievel was a big thing.
And I know who Evel Knievel is.
Right? He was the one who never gave up. I mean, he would bust himself up in 1,000 pieces, and he would get right back on that bike, right?
Yeah.
And then, I guess, so you wanted four, huh? Well, and then, I don't know, this might be cheesy, but I would say Clint Eastwood.
No, that's not cheesy. That's bad. That's a man's man right there.
Like, again, back in the day, that was... Those are the things that, you know, when the new Clint Eastwood movie came out, you watched it. at the theater.
He's 94, 95 now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, again, that's back in the day. So that would be my four, I guess.
Good for you, man. No, that's a solid list of like manly men doing manly shit right there.
Yeah,
like
that's exactly, yeah.
That perfectly sums up when I see Dave, Captain Dave, on the hard merch. That's who I think you're the manliest man in the fleet. You know, and like no. There you go. I'm not saying the other guys aren't men either. TJ's a man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Tyler, not so much. No, I'm kidding. I like Tyler too. He's good shit.
No, let's face it. The reason this show's successful is because of all the other guys. Because of that, I think it's that diverse group of characters that we all are. There's something to love and hate about everybody.
Yeah, I think Tyler's funny. He plays the part of like the villain who doesn't really want to be the villain, but like is portrayed. And I think he plays that perfectly. He knows his part and he plays it well.
Look, I was, you know, when I was 23, when I got my first boat, just like Tyler was when this all started, right? And I'm just glad there was no cameras following me around back then.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to be the one to be cast in no stone, so.
Yeah, yeah. There's got to be, like, an ego or like, a power trip once in a while that comes with this fishing game, right? Like,
and it comes with more so with the TV world, right? And I'm just thankful, you know, that this opportunity came this late in my life. Because I'm not sure if I could have handled it when I was a younger man. Or I wouldn't have handled it in a dignified manner, maybe. And that's not to say anybody else is doing anything wrong, right? I'm just, you know, that's a battle because, you know, I was never planned to be this guy. It's not like, you know, it's not like I was a struggling actor going, you know, hey, someday I'm going to make it and people are going to know who I am. You know, that's one of the, you know, I was content to be Dave the Fisherman. But that's one of the things, too, is, you know, you realize even during the tough moments that you can't put the genie back in the bottle. You know, I'll never be just Dave again. Right?
Nope.
You know, hopefully, you know, when this all runs its course, and it will, people will get sick of watching us catch a fish. And we get that. It's already gone longer than we ever imagined. Yeah. You know, I'll just let my hair grow in and fade off into the sunset. You know, into a modest retirement that honestly I never thought I'd have. That's been, you know, again, during the course of the show, we were able to start retirement planning for me and my wife, who's a, you know, generally a stay-at-home mom, right? That's a dream we never had. So, you know, and again, it's not millions. You know, I'm not Brad Pitt. It's not going to be a mansion in L.A. when I retire, but you know, to stay in the home we have and to be able to relax. Right. Traditionally, commercial fishermen, you pretty much work till you drop dead.
Yeah.
Now, given my personality, there's no guarantee I won't do that anyway. But it's nice to know that I potentially have the option to slow down a little.
Yeah. Same here. What you said about all that, you know, this will run its course. The TikTok thing, the Instagram thing, which is why I'm making other moves. Right. I'm jumping into the podcast. You know, I'm setting this up. I've got a couple other irons in the fire right now that I'm kind of working on that we'll get to at a later date, but the social media thing will run its course.
Yep.
And when it does, right, there's no putting this genie back in the bottle. You know what I mean? My boss said to me a few weeks ago, what if I told you to stop making videos now? Because this whole thing started with me making videos at work, showing my day-to-day and joking around about it and whatnot, and he allowed it to happen. That was 4 years ago. He said, what if I asked you to stop these days? I'm like, well, I guess I quit, right? I'll go somewhere else. And he just laughs. Because he won't ever do that, right? I brought them work and, you know, I do a decent job. So, you know, but the genie is out of the bottle now. This has created something for me. This has brought financial gain to my household, right? And now, like you said, there's no putting that genie away. And, you know, when this does fade off into the sunset, you know, I'm setting up with this podcast, I'm setting up, you know, to take that next level, to take the next step. There so, you know, we're working on it, and I hope it goes the way I want it to go. And you know, it's still fun for me. It's been over a year now. It's fun. We're taking this, you know, by leaps and bounds. Yeah. So you know, we're just taking it one day at a time. If leaps and bounds and one day at a time, it's kind of double entendre, but like, yeah, you know, same shit, different pile, I guess.
There we go. All right, man. Well, thank you again for having me.
No, man, thank you for coming on. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule, man. Tell the family I say thank you for, you know, I know it's dinner time, dinner time there now. So thank you for available. And hey, Dave, stay frosty.
Thank you. Thank you very much, man.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Thanks. You too. Bye.